Blog Talk Radio. Hi, this is Jane from Blog Talk Radio. John's on the line. We're talking about two topics tonight. The first one was a black man that was killed in Minneapolis. The police shot him twice after he was handcuffed, and there's been protests in that city. On top of that, four men, three whites and one Latino, they didn't kill. When the Black Lives Matter people were protesting two or three days ago, four people who were supremacists shot in the crowd, injuring five people, but not seriously. And now they're in custody, and one of them is from a neighboring city about 5 miles from where I live. His name is Nathan Gustafson. So the topic of the show tonight is Nathan Gustafson, the making of a killer, and also the holiday blues, how to avoid relatives when you really want to. So with that, I'm going to pull in John. Good evening, John.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, and Jane Hoffman.
Yeah, I'm just going to read this one. We're not going to spend the whole night on Black Lives Matter, but being that the fact that this epidemic of black killings hasn't really hit home yet, well, now it has, because the epicenter is now in Minneapolis and Chicago. I'm not going to mention the Chicago one tonight, except for to say that white cop was arrested for murder of a black person, in which he shot 16 times. The first time the kid fell down, and he kept shooting until he was beyond dead. So, but with the Minneapolis one, a kid named Jamar Clark, I guess he beat up his girlfriend, and then when the cops got there, they brought the girlfriend in the paramedic van, and I guess he was still giving the paramedics a hard time, so they put him in handcuffs, and then two people shot him. I mean, the cop shot him twice after he was handcuffed, but I don't know all the details. I just know that there was like a Rotary Club type place across the street, and that the video camera recorded most of it. It was a rotating video, like a surveillance video, and they didn't get it all. But the main thing tonight here is the four white supremacists plus one Asian, actually, who shot at the crowd while they were marching. So here we go with the clip.
5 Minnesota Black Lives Matter protesters. Five black to shoot 5 Minnesota Black Lives Matter protesters. 5 Black Lives Matter protesters protesting the killing of a black man in Minneapolis were allegedly shot by a group of white supremacists outside a police station on Monday. Protesters have been outside the police station every day since the police shooting of 24-year-old Jamar Clark on November 15th. Monday's shooting took place around 10:45 p.m. near the Black Lives Matter protest encampment at the 4th Precinct Police Station in North Minneapolis. Three white supremacists showed up at the protest, as protesters say they had done on most nights, and were taunting the protesters. When about a dozen protesters tried to move the men away from the area, shots rang out, and 5 of the protesters were hit. One was hit in the stomach, one in the back and leg, and one in the arm. The men fled the scene, and no arrests have yet been made. The victims are being treated at North Memorial Medical Center for non-life-threatening injuries. Three were able to drive themselves to the hospital, while two were taken by ambulance.
Like this video? Don't forget to subscribe and follow up.
Sorry about that. Okay, well, actually, they were arrested now. And one was Asian, and two of them were in firearms technology school in Minneapolis. One had been enrolled since 2012. Is that a sign of a potential terrorist to be enrolled in firearms technology school?
Wow. The things they're teaching kids nowadays.
So, let's start out. Should we start out with the Thanksgiving family dynamics, or do you want to take this story first?
It is Thanksgiving, so I kind of like to hit that just real quick.
Okay, let's start with the family dynamics first.
Well, you know, it is an interesting occasion. I think we talked last time, I mentioned about Lincoln's Thanksgiving Proclamation and how we weren't taught that in school, because he mentions God, he mentions sin and forgiveness and God's mercy and that kind of thing, and how that was around 1863. It's kind of during that period, 1861, 1862. In that period of time, there were several different proclamations, but I think the official one was in 1863. And then 100 years later, through the courts, they outlawed the basically mentioning God in our schools, the separation of church and state. So suddenly, kids aren't being taught this part of Thanksgiving. But just to kind of go back a little further, Thanksgiving.
Could you repeat that line about the separation?
Oh, yeah, just how the courts, Madeline Murray O'Hare went to the Supreme Court. She was a major atheist, famous, and she took it to the courts rather than, like, most atheists who would voice take their freedom of speech public. She went through the courts, and she was smart in that way, and they fought it. They basically came up with interpretations of the Constitution, and kind of came up to the idea of separation of church and state. It's not really stated. What is stated is that that we can't make any law establishing religion. So establishing, in my example, my interpretation would be to establish religion, you'd say, listen, when you go to school, you have to pray this prayer to Jesus or be a Christian God or be a Muslim or be Jewish or whatever it is. But what they interpreted is to say is that there has to be a separation where there is no religion brought into school. So in other words, you know, there's a major difference between me coming into school and saying, hey, did you know that there are scriptures that have the Ten Commandments, as compared to Billy, you have to believe in Jesus Christ and you have to be a Christian or you have to be a Jew. You know, there's a big difference between establishing something and just referencing something. But that's kind of how that went down.
Wow.
Even
if people were educated, what kind of effect do you think it would make nowadays?
Oh, it makes an incredible amount of, you know, with the things that are happening, with people's ideology, the way they think. People are like mad dogs. They're going crazy. Now, what is interesting, though, which, because I think this in a way kind of ties into it, you know, the saying that I always have is follow the truth wherever it leads you. It'd be very easy to say we're a Christian country and this is all just about God and we've gotten away from it. But there are other aspects to our country. If you deal with the truth, if you go further back with Thanksgiving, it wasn't Thanksgiving as much to thank God as it was. And I wish I was around back then so I could tell you the way it was. This is just based on letters and stories and, you know, things that were printed. But basically, the pilgrims got the Indians together to try to sign some kind of agreements because they wanted to get land. And it was kind of an invitation to massacre them. You know, basically, there was a couple different massacres. One was in 1637. I may not pronounce this properly, but it looks like Pequot to quote, P-E-Q-O-T, the Pequot tribe of Connecticut gathered for the annual green corn dance ceremony. Mercenaries,
green corn dance?
Yeah, because they used to celebrate with, you know, they would dance and they celebrate the corn. And they worship the universe and God and they had a whole spiritual concept of being thankful to the Creator. Now, they didn't acknowledge him necessarily as Jesus Christ, God's Son, the Holy Spirit, as God, as Yahweh, to Jewish God. But they did acknowledge, you know, that there was a God, and or even spirits. And so they had a green corn dance, and mercenaries of the English and Dutch attacked and surrounded the village. 700 people burning down everything and shooting whoever tried to escape. The next day, the governor of Massachusetts Bay Colony declared a day of Thanksgiving, thanking God that they had eliminated over 700 men, women, and children. It was signed into law that this day forth shall be a day of celebration and thanksgiving for subduing the Pequots. Most Americans believe
That's
Thanksgiving...
That's nice, killing 700 people and then being thankful for it.
Most Americans believe Thanksgiving was this wonderful dinner and harvest celebration. The truth is Thanksgiving dinner was invented to both instill a false pride in Americans and cover up the massacre. You know, I wasn't around then.
That's sad.
Also,
I guess
there was
not much has changed since we're talking about Black Lives Matter tonight.
Right, we're talking about minorities getting slaughtered by white supremacists. Now, we have, Don, who's a guest on the weekends, and he mentions a lot about the white man from Europe being, you know, dangerous to all the minorities and to the black man and to the, red man and other people, but mainly whites versus black. And to a certain point, he's right, but I wouldn't say he's right to the point that it's just a black-white thing. I think it's more, there's always people suppressing others, whether it's black on black, Chinese. I mean, Genghis Khan wasn't white; he's Chinese. But if
well,
he
I
had
don't,
the,
I know where
chance,
you're going with
have...
this, but I agree with that statement. I mean, my son's sister was killed by a black man, a black on black. But this is kind of different. It's more about it's not even really about white cops. It's just about law enforcement misappropriating their sense of force. Because you don't have to shoot someone twice in the head after they've already been handcuffed.
True.
Even if they were spitting at you. Now, I'm looking at one picture that says, "We have nothing to lose but our chains," in the protest.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think probably, too, what's happening in those situations is people in authority, especially it being white cops, but just, even if it's not white cops, people in authority basically taking their power and abusing it and thinking they'll get away with it, I would think, because, I mean, you'd have to think that who would be stupid enough to do that? You know, they're going to be a full investigation. They're going to look at body position, how many shots are fired, when they were fired, you know, the composition of the corpse, how long the person's been dead. So they're going to pretty much surmise this person was handcuffed and not in a. They may be threatening as far as physical injuries, like banging someone with their head or something like that. But as far as actually kill someone, pretty hard to do it with being handcuffed, unless you're like some super criminal. So, yeah, it doesn't look good.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, we've been over this before. Everybody knows, you know, pretty much what's going on. But it has been going on for several years now. Well, the Ferguson thing happened two summers ago already. And nobody wants to see it continue. Now, with the Chicago shooting that kid 16 times, he's already been arrested for first-degree murder, and that cop had 17 infractions as an officer before, 17 questionable actions. So he probably should have had discipline instituted in that case against that officer. Now, with Jamar Clark, he didn't behave perfectly, but it doesn't mean that he should have been killed. But the reason I brought up this story tonight is not so much the run-of-the-mill facts, but the fact that, even in all these intense things with the Ferguson thing where, like, some buildings were ruined, nobody has shot back at the crowd. You know, Nathan Gustafson was only 21, the one from up here. Daniel Macy, an Asian, was 26. Those were the two enrolled in firearms school. Alan Scarsella, the third, was 23, and Joseph Backman was 27. Now, a friend of mine who gave me a ride up north today to my cousin Toivo's told me that there were two public meetings of white supremacists up about 50 miles from Duluth, and that they're organized, and they see this as a threat, these Black Lives Matter things. But by the way, thank you for sharing the historical notion of Thanksgiving. It kind of sours my warm, fuzzy feelings about Thanksgiving, but thank you for sharing.
Well, you know, on top of that, because Tom, alias Slick, my musical brother, he looks up all kinds of stuff on the internet, and a lot of it's really trippy stuff, and one of a guy goes really further into it. I mean, like, he goes, I think, a little overboard, like saying the Indians are kind of the 12 lost tribes of Israel, and that they're the people of promise, and but it is interesting, like, and this is something we can, you know, maybe. It's almost like conspiracy theory stuff, or like the Illuminati. Like, we can study it at another time. But I mean, when you start studying the buildings and architecture of, you know, like New York City, or states like Indiana or Massachusetts, you'll see all this, like, kind of weird stuff. I mean, like Moses mixed with you know, Dionysus or Ishtar or Diana or some, you know, these pagan gods. With you know, some of the gods that are like of death and other things, and you go, and they've got the Ten Commandments in one hand and then something else in the other hand, and you're going, what are they trying to say? You know, it's like the Babylonian symbols and things, the pagan gods. You kind of go, like, is America a Christian country, or are we Babylon? And what I had to kind of tell him is that, you know what, Paul kind of ran into this couple thousand years ago, and that is, people were sacrificing, they were giving food to Christians that had been sacrificed to idols, or, you know, the prayers had been made to idols over it, and Christians were getting all freaked out, like, oh my goodness, this is, you know, devil food, and some people were like worship on a certain day other deities, and they were wondering what to do with it. And he said, you know what, don't even get caught up in that. Just give thanks for your food, eat it unto God. If you celebrate a day, celebrate it to the gods you know. Like, don't get caught up in they're worshiping, you know, whoever they're, you know, it could be Zeus, it could be Apollo, it could be whoever. If you believe in Jesus or whatever your faith, even whatever your faith is, just live it to your God. And don't get freaked out by it. So I think that's kind of the message I wanted to say to you, you know, Jane, is like, no matter what history you may hear, the point is you're giving thanks to your God, and you're being thankful to him. And, you know, the Indian might be thinking some rain god, or, you know, some pagan might be worshiping some other symbol. Men have been doing and women have been doing this the whole history of the world.
The question is, you know, just like everything else in life, I don't like to give thanks when I feel like I'm being coerced. And what I mean by that is, all of a sudden it's Thanksgiving, and I'm supposed to remember all the things that I'm supposed to be thankful for. Well, last night in the middle of my sleep, my airbed exploded, and now my airbed looks like a misshaped kidney bean. I can sleep on one narrow side of it, and the rest is the battle of the bulge. And I'm thinking, I've tried to be thrifty the last few years, and I can't even have the comfort of my own bed because I can't afford to go buy a new airbed until December 3rd. But it just, then I was in a weird mood this Thanksgiving because I didn't want to call my relatives. But I did end up sending them the same picture I sent you of the waterfall by my house, the creek. But I guess I was just kind of, they're wealthy, they're in a different income class, I'm struggling. They haven't helped me. Joan helped me with $65 in October, right around the time of the funeral, and Nancy's helped me over the years, but I just, they know I'm in need, but a week and a half or 2 weeks ago when I really needed help, nobody returned my calls, and I just didn't feel like returning their calls.
And I guess that's okay, you know. I think that we get – I think these things happen in our life, and they make us feel like – where is God, or where is the sense of order? I mean, like, I'll give an example. I was supposed to do, you know, kind of dog patrol, walk the dog, and I do these long shifts, you know, 8-hour shifts, 12-hour shifts kind of thing. And it's hard enough working a full-time job plus this other, you know, gig. And Mondays and Wednesdays I have a long shift. Like it goes from 3 in the afternoon to like 2 or 3 in the morning. Well, for Wednesday.
That's not normal. You used to get off at midnight.
Used to be, yeah. Yeah, but the job has kind of expanded and grown, and I'm trying to just keep it together. So on a Wednesday morning, say 8 or 9, you know, I'll try to like get in 4 or 5 hours of like work on my other job to try to cram it in there, because I know I'm going to be out way late and the next day it's going to be, you know, hard. And the guy who dog sits, apparently in the morning, there's someone who comes in at 9 or 10 or 11 to walk the dog for an hour or so, and then I come in and do all day. He didn't show up, and I think he already had arranged it, just they didn't tell the missus of the house. So the husband knew, the dog walker knew, she was busy or either didn't hear it or didn't keep up on it. So I get a call around 11 or so. Hey, dog walker's not here. How quick can you be here? I'm in the middle of like work, right? I'm expecting in 2 or 3 hours to go to my shift. And suddenly like, you need coverage now. And so I'm like, oh boy, well, let me, you know, start with the truth. It's like, I'm in the middle of stuff, right? And it's like, it's going to take me an hour or two to put things together. I'm kind of in a stage in my life where it's like, you know, I'll get there when I get there. You know, this is a favor. You know, you want me to, you know, I'm not the fire department. This isn't my only gig. You know, I'm not waiting around for someone to call me.
Yeah.
I've got to like put out some fires and then leave. So point is in this process, you know, I get like all the, you know, the 5 or 6 texts of, where are you? Come on, how soon can you get here? I'm like, hey, it's going to take, you know, an hour or two. And this is Wednesday, right? So you got Thanksgiving traffic trying to get, you know, everything's backed up and there are no shortcuts. And then this goes, you know, all the way till it's like 3 in the morning. And when I get back, you know, I've got to get parking for a vehicle. And the door for the car won't shut. Like, it's not latching totally. And it's like, it's, you know, it's not a big deal, but then again, it is. Because the door won't shut, right? It's like, you want the freaking door to shut so you can lock it. You know, you don't want people walking around there and busting in your car. And then we have to drive somewhere. What are you going to do? Like tie rope around the windshield or something to keep the door from flying open? So it's a simple thing, right? Just like with your bed. It's like you want to get some sleep. You know, it's like, where is God? It's like, you know what? In times past, I mean, God didn't make air beds or water beds or any kind of bed. I mean, he basically put some branches together for, like, some leaves together for Adam and Eve, and that was it. It's kind of like, you know, sew your own clothes. It's life is a jungle.
So are you saying I should get a couple of twigs to sleep in tonight?
Yes, I'm saying.
I could sleep.
You're
kind of
on your own on it.
I have a futon in the living room, but it's not comfortable, and I had emotional attachment to that bed.
I can believe it. No,
the
bed
is
very personal.
A symbol of me avoiding permanent settlement. I'm a permanent nomad, and it's a symbol of my rejection of capitalism, that tomorrow my palate may be in another city.
Right. So it's part of your groove. It's part of your identity. And we run into these things.
And that has lasted over, I'd say, 15 months. I probably bought it in the spring of 2014.
And you kind of wonder... I run into this. We have a personal groove that we establish for ourselves. And, I mean, I've got many modes, right? I've got, like, military mode. I've got, you know, kind of Batman mode. I've got like Mr. Efficiency, like just do stuff mode. And then like one of the gigs I'm in, one of the modes is just I can't respond. All I can do is yes, no, or I don't know. I can't fill in the blank. It's kind of like being on a witness stand.
I think you're talking about when your boss is bossing you around and you're an autopilot.
Right, you can't really think. I'll give you an example. You walk in and it's like, you know, there's a yellow bird that tweets, and I've had this bird for eight. It's a stuffed doll, right? And it's been on my bed for 8 years, and Saturday it's missing, and you're the only one that was in the house Saturday, and the dog was in my room with me on the bed, and then the dog, you know, I let her out of my room to go meet you so you could walk her at 11, and I haven't seen it since. So what did the dog do with it? Did you throw it away? Did the dog take it outside and you didn't notice it? You know, this kind of stuff, and you're going, what the freak?
Give me a break.
Like, okay. There's only two people really that have a vested interest in this doll, you or the dog. Now, the dog may like this doll, but the point is animals will gravitate towards anything. You know, just pick another tweet, you know, toy or a stick or a bone, and the dog will forget about whatever it has in the moment because that's the way their minds are. So it's like, okay, I didn't take it. I don't play with it. I don't want it. I walk the dog. I don't let the dog walk around outside with the doll, right? It's either in your bed, it's in your room.
And you wouldn't notice if the dog did it.
Right. The thing is, the point is, this stuff happens while I'm at home the night before praying to Jesus and thanking God and praying that, you know, my life will turn better, that, you know, my debts will go away, that I will come up with a better way of managing finance, you know, whatever. A rich woman will walk in my way. A rich relative will die and leave me money. You know, there's a million different things that go through your mind. So, you know, can someone watch my video and go, hey, let's sign this guy. You know, he's great. You know, he's what we're looking for. The point is all these scenarios are going and you're praying and the next day you're having to defend your life over missing dolls, right? You go, where's God in all this? You know, what's going on? I totally understand.
I just think you're in a situation where you're constantly under attack. It's not very much fun, let's face it. But,
right, so the mode
you
I have to go into is like,
for
if
job
I...
Because nobody else could put up with it.
Well, it's great training because it prepares me for Auschwitz. It prepares me for any kind of prison. It prepares me for if there's a government takeover where Christians are being persecuted, right? There are people in other countries. There are people in Indonesia where Muslims round them up and they just slaughter you because you're a Christian, just because you won't convert. There's other countries like that, you know, where it's just weird stuff happens and you go, how do you respond to that? Do you get a gun and shoot? Do you say, you know, I forgive you as they slash your throat? You know, there's all kinds of different things. I think you have the freedom to choose. If you can run, you run. If you can defend yourself, you know, successfully, do it. Which kind of goes back to this Indian thing. I don't know, were the Indians totally friendly? The accounts I have is that they were very cool. They were like, here, let's show you how to, you know, farm, and these are the crops you need, because these settlers were starving to death in the winter. And when it made it, and they were telling them, and their code was different. You know, like the Indians were like, when white people were saying they're savages, it's like no, they had fights among themselves, but it was different. It was kind of like family members, like, okay, you know, Uncle Joe didn't like his nephew because he said, you know, he disrespected him. So they're going to go outside and whoop it out, and it'll be done with. You know, it wasn't like, let's take him to court. They'll just go out there and, you know, beat each other up, and then they'll be, you know, they'll respect each other and they'll go on. Whereas with Americans, especially white Euro settlers, like, we're going to wipe out some people, take over the land, and give it a new name. You know, that was like a foreign concept, you know, because you have all these tribes across the country. you know, all these different ones. You know, they Sioux and Apache and whatever. They didn't try to wipe each other out totally. It's like, okay, you have your territory, we have our territory. If we have a beef, you know, we'll go out there and we'll settle this and then go back to our corners. So it's kind of new to them, you know, the idea
of
genocide.
You know, there's never been a point on Earth where everything's perfect. I mean, there's always been local and tribal struggles.
Right,
but
no matter what the culture.
And I'd rather still live in America than Syria. But there's even struggles today up here in northern Minnesota with tribes and the native, the local government. The Native American tribe, they won 2 times in court for federal protection of their downtown casino, because it's the only one, I believe it's the only one in America that isn't on city property, and they severed their original agreement with the city of Duluth, the casino, a few years ago, and they no longer give the city half the revenue. They only give them $60,000 for the parking structure next door, and the city,
They probably feel it's a little bit of payback, right?
They gave them money for years, but now they don't, like for 15 to 20 years.
And there's probably the feeling of like, listen, white man, you took our land, so now, you know, here's our chance to stiff you on something, and we're going to, you know, there's no guilt. The same thing like with, I have African-American, friends who were like, if you can get welfare, take it. If you can get this thing, take it. If you can fake an injury, you know, and get a lawsuit, take it. Because, you know, this country is built on our backs, and they used us as slaves. Well, yeah, we were your great-grandfather probably, but not you. But the point is they're going to justify that by, you know, a previous injustice. And I think you'll find this – I think what the issue, kind of the big issue is that governments – have to function societies, and you have to do it with an army or with police force, or, you know, with some kind of system. And to defend yourself against another country, you have to have an army. So it doesn't matter whether you're Christian or Muslim or communist or socialist or liberal or whatever. At some point in this, you're going to have to take an army and have soldiers, have policemen, have whatever it is. And they're going to have a code. They're going to have something they're doing in the name of. You know, I'm doing in the name of Allah. I'm doing in the name of Yahweh. I'm going to do in the name of, you know, Christ, you know, Christians, the Roman Catholic Church or whatever. And so we get kind of confused that really, you know, there's personal, spiritual concepts, turn the other cheek, forgive, love, do unto others. But then there's a code of warfare. And all is fair in love and war, and this is a different game. And people get confused. It's like, oh, man, it's a Christian country. How can they be a Christian and they wiped out Indians, or they, you know, killed this group or that group, or in you know, Afghanistan? It's like, you know what? Everyone's doing it. It doesn't matter what your government
there
is.
There is a difference between, as I've mentioned on other shows, the clash of civilization. A political scientist said in the post-Vietnam era, it's going to be more of a thing of tribal warfare rather than military strategy, like, you know, traditional military strategy to geographically conquer different people. Now, we still do not know to this day fully why America went into such poor countries like Iraq and Afghanistan. Iraq at least had a strong economy, but Afghanistan is really a really undeveloped country where we lost millions of dollars, and it's still pretty insecure. But
I'm sure, though, there had to be some kind of monetary situation or
power.
By that, I would mean
it's... Well, they were going to build a pipeline through the northern Middle East, but we only have 5 minutes left. So I'm just going to do my conclusion, and you know, by December 3rd, we'll be up and running again fully. My headliner tonight is Nathan Gustafson, The Making of a Hermantown Killer, and also The Holiday Blues. what I want to say is that, you know, tradition rolls around, and I just notice, maybe not so much for Christmas, but with Thanksgiving, the beginning of the holiday season of the three major holidays between here and New Year's, I just notice a sense of internal expectation that people have when facing and being around their relatives. I'm thankful for having some of my mom's relatives around here. I have basically four people in general with some outlying cousins that I deal with, four main ones, and I'm glad that I had somewhere to go today. I don't have a car, so I couldn't go to Lauren's family's house down in the cities. I'm also kind of surprised that there's still things. Well, I guess there's more focus now on unjust police killings, but I'm more upset that people are fighting back with weapons on protesters. If they want to protest, fine. If they break windows and cars, that's one thing. But, you know, fighting back with guns is inappropriate, and it just, like, it ties in with what John said about cultural conflict and the meaning of symbolic moments in America, including holidays and history, and what the original people's intentions were when they wrote the Constitution and other documents. So with that, I'll pass and I'll let John go.
Well, what's happening in this situation, it's so tragic, but what's even more tragic is it happens so much. I can't even keep track of the names. You know, Herman, whatever, right? And the reason
Herman
it, it's almost
yeah.
The reason it does is because it happens so much. I just lose track. You know, it's almost like the thought is like, you know, like an Asian or an African American. It's like they all look the same. It's more like the names blur because it happens so often. Oh, yeah, you know, white cop kills black person that was,
can I just,
you know,
tell you something quick and
go
interrupt
for
you?
It.
And that, but you still
go
have 2 minutes. I was looking at a YouTube video about the recap made by that private person. This one guy writes, ha, 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 ha. People didn't even notice that it was all Latinos who made the shots, not whites. There were 3 whites and 1 Asian, so this person on YouTube must have heard a rumor that one of them wasn't white and he didn't look into it. Like, you know, that's just lazy.
Right.
So, I mean,
oh,
people
yeah.
have so many misconceptions. But go ahead, you still have 2 minutes left, sorry.
Right, well, and what I was going to say is that it happens so much, and I don't know if it's happening more. I think it's happening more, but I think it's also the news press kind of sensationalized it. But it just seems like certain things in history would be, like, you once every 10 years you kind of remember, you know, like Rosa Parks, you know, on the bus, Ted Bundy, serial killer, and it's like for 20 years you can kind of, like, those names stick out, you know, certain names throughout history. It just seems like with this white on black or you know, Black Lives Matter kind of thing, it just seems like it's every other day, here goes another one. And you kind of, it's like I'm almost not numb to it. I just can't keep it, especially with the work, you know, that I'm doing. It's like, it's almost to a point of, is it statistically we're just being over bombarded with this stuff, or is it just it's a small fragment?
Well,
and
I think part of it is, you know, the Chicago one. That one was made known because the cop was actually arrested. But I don't think that happened recently. It might have happened 2 weeks ago. I don't even know.
It happened a while back.
It wasn't like yesterday.
I know that in the 80s with Dade County, Miami, and when they used to have all the Colombian drug cartel wars, one year they had, like, you know, I think